Session number 15478.
Mr. Morgan Griffiths, Real 4. Just going back to the Hartenstein Hotel.
Yes.
How long were you there?
About 3 days.
What happened to you there?
Well, we got really smothered with enemy fire, and then they come the order to withdraw to the river bank, where someone put a white tape down to just do it in the dark. And that is when the boats are coming over, some of these canvas boats are coming over to pick us up and take us over as much as possible, as many as possible, while others decide to swim. And I decided to swim, you see.
But at the Hartenstein Hotel, were you firing yourself?
Oh, yes, yes. We had one or two little skirmishes there. Can't say a great deal of what they were, but we get attacked. Some patrol will come along and fire at us, and we'd fire back again, you see, and things like that. It was more or less a last stand place, but we didn't get sort of shelled out of the place, as you might say.
Had you come across Dutch civilians in the end?
Oh, yes, quite a few, yes, yes. I remember one chap here, a fellow named Essling. I kept in touch with him for some time afterwards. I met him again on a year afterwards. I went back to help make the film Laces of Glory and unveil the new memorial with the Queen. Queen Wilhelmina unveiled it, and I stayed at their house.
His name was Essling?
Essling, yes. Harry Essling, HSSSLING.
How had you come across him in the enclave?
Well, he'd bought us some water or something up there, I remember, and I saw him hanging about there, and I said, you better get to that tank, because you're going to get blown off if you stop out there much longer. And he came into a foxhole, which is ancient, next to where I was sitting, lying. And we got talking, and he spoke very good English. Strangely enough, he became a pilot for the Dutch Airways afterwards.
So you met him at the Hartenstein Hotel?
Yes. Then I lost him, because, you know, in the rush, we had to get back, and he disappeared. I suppose he... Excuse me. I suppose he went back home again, or wherever he lived, just outside there, anyway.
But he had been of help to a British troop?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. He's only about 16 or 17. There's one or two like that there, helping out.
Who actually were you with at the Hartenstein Hotel?
There was Colonel Longsdale. I remember Colonel Longsdale very well. A couple of my own company, not my platoon, but two out of my own company was there, and quite a few others which I knew by sight, which you do in the airborne. You meet them all, strangely enough, three of them was in the same prisoner of war camp as I was afterwards, three sergeants.
Which part of the hotel were you in?
In the front part, facing out towards the there's always ruins, I suppose. I know there was a big building on the right there, on the corner, some distance away, which became a hospital. No, a field base, rather, I suppose. And,
were you getting any supplies into you?
No, not very. We had a supply drop. Some of it was, of course, dropped well out of our reach, although we did have one pannier come down with odds and ends in, you see, some stuff in there, mostly chocolate, tins of chocolate, and there was... Tea bags, coffee, I think it was. But no water, never get any water down, unfortunately.
Was the hotel much smashed up?
It was, yes. It, it had really had a bashing, actually. By the time we left, it really was in a bit of a grotesque state. But of course, they rebuilt it up again, haven't they? Well, partly, I suppose. I don't know if they've rebuilt it. Have they rebuilt it? Take it down in the old ruins and rebuilt it. I'm not sure.
Had you thought that you might not escape from there?
Oh, yes. I never thought we wouldn't. When the order came to withdraw, of course, you see, we was being fired on so very heavily by the Second Army. Shells coming over, and every few minutes there'd be a rush of air and screaming shells that come over from the other side of the river bank. And, well, it's one of those things which you always get in the line of your own fire in lots of cases and things like that. Of course, strangely enough, it's my own regiment, the Irish Guards, who's trying to get to us. They was in the lead. And I think the colonel at that time was Van der Leeuwe. Yeah, Van der Leeuwe, Joe Van der Leeuwe, we used to call him.
Did you know him?
Oh, yes, yes. I remember him as an agent when I was in the army, you know, when I was in the peacetime army regiment. The big, nice moustache there. Yeah. I also remember him in Windsor. He had a horse called Limerick, because all the officers rode horses in the peacetime, you see, war. And I was sergeant, a corporal of the guards at the time of Windsor Barracks, Victoria Barracks, Windsor. And just up the road there, there was a pub, Carpenter's Arms, I think it's called, Peacecuts, up towards Peacecut Street, Windsor. And the battalion athletic team went there for exercise, run through the park into the Great Park, you see, where they used to do a 3 or 4 mile run. And of course they went out, and Joe Van der Leeuwe, that's his name, decided to ride his horse to the gate and watch them gallop up the road, you see. And he said, I remember him turning around, back in the gate again, "Turn the guard out, corporal," he said. "I've never seen anything like it. Runners, they're running the first bloody pub." Waving his sword, waving his sword in the air, of course. You see, Mad Joe's there again, you see. And of course, they all got 14 days. Yeah, great fellow, Van der Leeuwe. And his brother was entirely opposite.
How do you mean?
Different type of fellow altogether. Quiet. Yeah, different fellow altogether. He finished up a major, I think, or a colonel. And Van der Leeuwe finished up a brigadier. He's quite an energetic fellow. Yeah.
Now, let's go back to where you were being taken with your injury into Germany.
Yeah. I was in Apeldoorn for about 3 days, and they moved us all out, took our helmets away from us, and things like that. And put us in an ambulance, and went by train. Went on the train. I went to Fall in Bostel. I'm trying to think the number of the camp.
Doesn't matter.
Fall in Bostel anyway, and I was there for about a week or 10 days. And of course, they decided that all senior NCOs had got to be moved out, you see. And the senior warrant officer in the camp was, John Lord, the ex grenadier, and he was the RSM of the, I think it's the 3rd Battalion. Anyway. He hid down below somewhere in the camp, and he refused to go, and he hid somewhere, and of course he stayed behind, and he ran. Apparently, he came out afterwards. He really ran the camp as it should be run for prisoners of war.
You're talking about Fall in Bostel.
At Fall in Bostel, it was, yes. He died, I think, around about the late 50s of cancer. That's right. I went to his funeral in the Military College, Sandhurst, where he was buried. And we moved us out to Sargon. And that's when I made my first dramatic attempt to escape. I was with a Polish parachute officer I happened to know. I had met a Polish, Poles were stationed near Wolverhampton. When I was going to leave, I used to see quite a few of them. And I didn't know this chappy quite well, got to know him quite well. And he's in this, we weren't put into coaches, we were put into cattle trucks. And fortunately, there's a board loose on this truck I was in. And
was this on the way to Sargon?
On the way out of Falling Bossel to Sargon. And we went through Berlin, and in the call, is it Little Berlin, which is just past Berlin itself. We go down a slope for a few miles, and we'd been on the train in about 3 days, 2 or 3 days. We was on that train, I think it's the third day, we decided to make a break for it, and we could. So, as we went to Berlin, stopped at Berlin, we gathered speed and went down this incline and started to climb about a mile away into the country. And we pulled the board up and got on the running board, three of us, this Polish officer, myself and another chap, and we rolled off down the embankment. And we could be in across the country somewhere. Can't tell you where, but we thought we'd make for the border again into Holland, you see, because it was on the direct line there, you see, North Holland. And our idea actually was to try to get across to Denmark or someplace, you know, get a boat away or something across there, or Sweden, I think it was Sweden, wasn't it? Neutral, wasn't it? Sweden, I think. And we didn't get very far, actually. We picked up the train up, got on this train, some station about... we was away 4 days, actually, altogether. And got off this train one morning, one evening, off the train in a good station. And, of course, in Germany in those days, if there's an air raid on, no one was allowed on the streets except the police. Nobody, only the police. And of course, the grey-coated or rain-coated Gestapo. And we were walking up the one side of the railway line, and all of a sudden there was a shout, Enoch, come see me, you know, so here we go, you see. And he said, we've been watching you three, this German soldier said, this German sergeant said. We've been watching you three. You had a nice little long walk, haven't you? You were away 5 days altogether. He says, better come and see the officer. They marched, there's about four of them, they marched into this headquarters. And I'm trying to think of the name of the town we was in. Anyway, he spoke lovely English, this young officer did. He says, nice to meet you, gentlemen, he said. Sorry you haven't got any farther. I always remember his words, he says, but you're going for a long rest to get over it anyway, he said. I'm sure you've had a very tiring journey this last 4 days. And he says, you're going to have 7 days punishment, all of you, he said, so make your mind up, he says, to have a rest. And I went into a cell, which is about as big as a telephone kiosk. And I was in there 7 days. No light. I had a faint glimmer of light through a window or something at the top, which blackened out. A square hole in the door with a flap, which I pushed a bowl of goulash through in the morning. and that's about all you've got. There's a hole in the corn to use as a loo. And I was pretty fit those days, but when I came out of there, I must admit, I came out on my underneath. And I felt a bit shattered. My shoulder wasn't all that good either. I had to still have plaster on it. So they put leg irons on us and handcuffs. And we finished up the same place we was going to in any case, Sargon. That's where we finished up there.
What was impression did Sargon make on you on arrival?
Well, not very much. I thought I'm not stopping here if I can help it, but of course I did. There's no way out of that place. No way at all. And when we got to Sargon itself off the train, we had about an 8 kilometre march to the camp. Took our boots off us, put them around our neck. We still had the leg irons on. And they took the handcuffs off us, but first on one handcuff, one to your wrist and belt, it's there, there was a cuff. The other one, they left three. And we marched into the camp like that. And you can only take about a 12 to 14 inch stride because of the leg irons. And we had a pretty rough time in that camp, I can tell you. Very few Red Cross parcels. We used to get one, used to be between 3 or 4. And then, just to annoy us, the Germans, the guards used to open the parcels and all the tins. Because they said there used to be files or some type of escape article in the parcels, which of course there wasn't any at all, but they used to do this, I think, to annoy us, and they used to really have a laugh at us, trying to put the trying to sort out the soup from the tin milk and stuff, you know. Yeah. And it was a terribly cold camp. I know in the there's no heating at all. You get one loaf of bread per day between 12, and if you cut half a quarter, 1/8 of an inch to one bit longer than the other one, you nearly got slaughtered. But it was really rations which you couldn't spare a crumb of. Unless you expected trouble. And the punishment was to throw you in the... the toilets were outside in slit trenches with poles. And if you dare to attempt to take any rations or anything whatsoever that didn't belong to you, you were thrown into the pit.
Did that happen to anybody?
Oh, yes. I remember... the last camp we was at before we got released, a sergeant major out of one of the glider battalions. I think it was a glider battalion. I don't know his name, but he was caught with a strip of pills, some sort of pills that he'd taken out of a parcel, not belong to him, and he was tossed in there, and they wouldn't let him come back in again until he washed himself. And of course, if the water was no water on, you had to wait until the water turned on. I remember the we had a colonel come down one day from Berlin, short fellow with a dark suit on, about 60. And he interviewed senior NCOs. I was one of them. So you go inside, and I remember being warned to go into this be careful what you say, Griff. I said, oh yes, everybody else, you see. And I went in, and all the office painted green, grey. First thing I looked around for, I wonder where the microphones are. And the first thing he said to me was, oh, sit down. Yeah, why do you wear a red beret? That's what you call it, isn't it? Yes. I said, well, it's our colour. Ah. Now, he said, I'm a colonel, he said, from Berlin. He said, I notice these things. He said, but surely red is the colour of the Russians. He says, are you a member of the Russian forces? Oh, no. I said, well, yeah, I know you're a parachutist. Therefore, he said, you're a dangerous man, aren't you? And all you people with these red bellies are dangerous. I said, I don't think so. I said, we're prisoners of war, so therefore we're out of the war. Ah, are you? He said. Now, he said, I'll go a little off it. He says, we like people like you, he said, because you're strong and well-trained. He said, I can offer you a little appointment as is in Berlin, he said, which is, you call it, which is Free Corps. He was a recruiter for the British Free Corps. So, of course, I looked around, I thought to myself, now, be careful what you say, Griff, because whatever you say, you're either before you or against you. So, if you say anything about the Russians, and you come home, you're crying your allies down. If you agree that it's a good cause, you don't want to join it, you are siding with the enemy, so it's best to say nix. So I said, I don't wish to discuss anything with you, sir, at all. Only we could do with more water. And he says, well, tell you, ask your IAF to stop bombing our mains and you shall have more. Do you read? I said, yes. He said, what books? He goes, there's a lot of books on there. And I remember picking this one up. It's this It was quite a popular book at the time. It wasn't allowed in England, but we did get it after the war. I can't think what it's called, but I did come across the title in one of my books. So I've got it in the other room there. It'll come to me soon anyway. And I went back to the unit, but back to my hut. But I know several NCOs did become members of the British Free Corps.
Why do you think they did that?
Well, they disappeared and they went away the next morning. So they must have become members of it. Because that's the way they recruited them. And strangely enough, that British Free Corps wasn't such a big corps after all. Apparently, it only got a few members. Well, I say a few members, I don't know, but according to the books I've read, the most they must have is about 100. All their good uniform, good pay, good rations, and all the women they wanted in Berlin. So they did quite happy. But I'm afraid it wasn't for me anyway.
So eventually you were marched out of Sarum.
Yes, I think it was about the first week in January or middle of January, sometime like that anyway. Now, I know there was about 3 or 4 feet of snow on the ground. It was a shock, a bad winter. I think it was around about the end of January, something like that anyway. And
sorry, just do it from memory.
Yeah, about end of January, and we were just told to get out one morning, just after dawn. We'd bring a kit with you, and that's all. And then we went and got counted and marched off. Just as we was. Some of us took a blanket with us, some of us got our great coat, you see. And I think it was on that march, middle of March anyway, before we got to a place called Bad Soden. Bad Soden, that's right, yes. Yeah.
Bad?
Soden. Yeah. It's
what were conditions like on the march?
Oh, well, it was terrible. Because there are no food, only what they... the wagon, which is, used to be a food wagon, used to stop once a day. And, of course, don't forget, there was hundreds of us on this march. The whole camp had been marched out. And that's because the Russians are advancing towards the area. And they marched us all out. And we weren't the only camp that were treated the same way. And I think we was on there nearly over a month anyway. And
anything special you saw on the way?
Yes, there's fellas used to break, used to stop perhaps for 10 minutes, and some of the fellas used to have to use the side of the roads for toilets, and you get the order to fall in, and I saw three fellas shot because they couldn't get back in line in time enough to march off. The sentries would fire at you. We were very lucky to fire warning shots, but I know I saw three killed on that march, or wounded badly anyway. You couldn't do anything to help them.
Did you attempt to remember which guards had done it?
No, you could never see who there was. They was just, they'd be changing all round. They'd some of them walking up the front, some of them walking at the back, and they'd change over and do all. And of course, by the time we reached Bad Soden, which is nearly 1,000 miles away, that was. I was down to 6 stone anyway. 8 stone, I should say. I lost 6 stone altogether. I was 14 stone. That's right, just under 14 stone, I say. And during this camp there, I got the same clothes on as I had when I was taken prisoner. Same pants, same vest, same shirt. None had been washed, couldn't wash them here, there's no water. Boots was off, I got clogs wrapped around with cloth around your feet, which of course didn't do your feet any good. They had wooden clogs and terrible to walk in. And lice was absolutely, you were smothered with lice, that is all there was to it. You wasn't just out of lice, you were smothered with it, all over. That's the first time, I think, during that march that I ever fainted in my life. One morning I was standing in line waiting for something and I was perished with a cold, and I remember falling down on the side, and the chappy next to me said, "All right, Griff,